Yeah, I think about superheroes deeply, though, like not just the story that's happening. I think about the whole reflection of them in our society and mm-hmm. and the whole, like the Joseph Campbell take on the importance of mythology and kind of what I call macro psychology. Mm-hmm. But before, I don't want to get lost into that stuff. You wrote something up, so if you wanted to read that, let's do that.
Yeah, it's 3.5 pages. That will be a little over 15 minutes, I think. And then we can take the discussion from there.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Shall I start right away?
Sure.
Okay. The true culture war. Then out spake brave Horatius, the captain of the gate. To every man upon this earth, death cometh soon or late. And how can man die better than facing fearful odds for the ashes of his fathers and the temple of his gods? Thomas Babington Macaulay, quoted by Pat Buchanan on Suicide of a Superpower and the Death of Western Civilization. A myth is a foundational narrative that defines culture and identity of the people that consider it their own. Thus, the term foundational myth is a tautology. All myths are foundational, but the term shall be used for the moment to prevent deliberate misunderstandings by the ill-willed. Now, the figure of the eternal Nazi and its ritualistic, almost religious repetition by the political class of Germany seems to some as political kitsch, since Germany joined the West after World War II, and West Germany lived through the entire Cold War on the side of the USA. But since my people has joined the West, we needed to adopt the same foundational myth in which Hitler and Nazism were absolute evil and imposing them absolute good. Repeating them was the reaffirmation that we belong to the West and this current world order, a belonging that was forged in a poisoned attachment, a neurosis which makes it impossible for Germany to heal as long as the West in its current order and with its foundational myth exist. And it got worse the further away the actual war was, just like the faith in Jesus grew exponentially the longer his actual crucifixion was away. Holocaust denial laws are the last quasi-divine dogma in a rational world absent of gods, and thus it is not surprising that the blasphemer can only plead guilty or insane. Hate speech laws are the dogmas in the time where the state has become the church, as it was predicted in the Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. The concentration camp has replaced the cross, and the suffering of the Jews has replaced the suffering of Jesus Christ. Thus, the only salvation to those who adhere to this religion fully lies on the blood sacrifice of the German people. With a little more goodwill than might be adequate, this can be seen as an attempt to save both Christianity and Judaism in a world that can no longer believe in God. A theodicy problem also in Judaism, since many Jewish intellectuals believed that after the Holocaust it could only be concluded that God does not exist. Thus, the idolatry and replacement of Jesus or God himself is lessened by the general secularization of our world and the people following this Cold War religion. While you will find the ultra-Orthodox Jews opposed to Zionism, because Israel's existence without the return of the Messiah contradicts the teachings of Judaism, and on the other hand, the evangelicals are rallied with the promise that Israel's existence indicates the coming of Jesus Christ. Generally speaking, Jews rejected their guilt for the death of Christ when they were in a similar situation of bearing a mark of Cain. And so today, most Germans don't believe in this new secular religion. I also think that most Jews do not believe in it. But the communists and anti-whites who equate Nazism to all white Europeans among Jews and the ethnomasochists among Germans believe it. The latter are a minority among Germans, but a dominant group among the German political class, and it may be assumed they also are among the political classes of the entire West. Both share the same essential belief, and thus we have a situation of some Germans welcoming the death of their people advocated for by communists and anti-whites, be they Jewish or not, just like some among all people of the West. And in this context, the words of Peter Feldman and Joseph Joffe exist. Rolf-Peter Siefele, who had similar thoughts, committed suicide. But there is a solution for this that demands neither the death of the German people or a new world order, nor even a new system, and that is atheism in this regard and the rejection of this false faith. This too shall be enlightened. Culturally and spiritually, World War II has to be seen in combination with World War I as the Second 30 Years' War. But a war between what? A war between paganism on the one side, including social Darwinism, eugenics, euthanasia, ethnic tribalism, their morality, and finally with Hitler as both Nietzsche's Übermensch, as Thomas Mann said, and the avatar of Odin, as Carl Jung said. And on the other side, Judeo-Christianity, with the USA as its clearest crusading force. As Eisenhower said in his D-Day message, soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade to which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Good luck, and let us beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. Yahweh wult. Everything else is mere consequence. Wagner, too, after his lecture of Schopenhauer, ended with Christianity in Parsifal, and the Catholic J.R.R. Tolkien played a large role in converting C.S. Lewis to Christianity and despised Hitler, later equating Nazi Germany to Mordor. As a side note, it is a fundamental misconception to see the Lord of the Rings as pagan literature. The Allfather, which is the Abrahamic God and not Odin, holds all the strings of providence together and brings about the Eucatastrophe, Tolkien. And I concluded by saying that the resurrection was the greatest Eucatastrophe possible in the greatest fairy story and produces that essential emotion, Christian joy, which produces tears because it is qualitatively so like sorrow, because it comes from those places where joy and sorrow are at one, reconciled, as selfishness and altruism are lost in love. There can be seen hypocrisy, back then and today, and much of it. But that is because it was not the ideology that had won the war and not even the soldiery. Already about World War I, Ernst Jünger stated that they had gone into it to try and save the warrior and hero, and that they had failed. The war engineer had decided it, and so the industrial war machine decided the outcome of World War II, ultimately not delivering a falsification of the struggle for life, but reaffirming it. Also, the initial victory of communism seems like an aberration in this theory, since it is, at least officially, an anti-Christian system. But Judeo-Christianity is the grandmother of communism, and ultimately it too perished. The Soviet Union is no more, and China became to a large degree capitalist. A form of Christianity without God and heaven as a mere earthly material utopia were unacceptable, and therefore kill a commie for Christ became the fitting synopsis of the Cold War. So it is not surprising in the least that the Jewish anti-communist John von Neumann would convert to Christianity at the end of his life. The human side of it is summarized in the perspective of Christian anarchist Tolstoy, that if a communist revolution were to succeed, we would have political functionaries instead of economic ones. It was again the question if the state should become the church or the church should become the state. The left generally takes the first position, the right, however, generally the second one. And how could it be more evident than in the evangelicals and Zionists? The Cold War left in the USA evangelical and Calvinist capitalism and the Christian social democracies and their ideologies in Europe. Of the latter, Merkel, the churches, and the social democratic parties are the clear representatives of. With Merkel's background in communism and socialism leading over the Protestant church and her own father right into the present. There are no contradictions, only logical consequences. And the great moral turn, and a world led by allegedly more compassionate and wise superior females, which many prominent concentration camp and gulag inmates dreamed of, is the world that we have today. It is therefore only logical that those who created communism, and more importantly Judeo-Christianity, should inherit the earth after World War II as its spiritual, ideological, and practical masters. May the Horst Güntherchen wallow in their own blood and the Inges passed over to the Brolish brothers with tickets of privilege for the Jews, wrote Theodore W. Adorno shortly before the defeat of Ernest Germany from California to his parents in New York. He rejoiced. Now finally everything was kicked down, what has been desired for years. The country polluted, millions of Hans Jürgens and Utes dead. The neck of the folk probably broken so that it will be excreted as a subject from history. Vengeance to the tyrant fled, and caught the tyrant in his bed, and slew the wicked tyrant's head, and became a tyrant in his stead. William Blake. As Einstein put it, he saw nothing chosen or special in his people other than that they, due to their lack of power, had remained absent from the worst abuses of it. Now we can say, welcome to the club. But it goes deeper than this, much deeper. Because for all the Faustian spirit of Europe, for all its adventurous prowess of the conquerors and the ruthless brutality of our race, Europeans failed to create a spiritual dominion capable of making all aspects and stages of life its subject and imprinting it with the folkish soul of their people, which was truly their own. Or more bluntly put, we failed to extend our will to power to the foundation and truth of the entire universe and shaping it as the expression of our fundamental identity. Necessarily, the honorable, the brave, and free would find themselves as the subservient warrior caste of Jewish Brahmins, educating the most powerful nation on earth to their ends and making them bend the knee before their one true God. What a sight, both awe-inspiring and dreadful at the same time, with the historical consequence of 2,000 years. And indeed, if the Second Thirty Years' War was a fundamental conflict between Judeo-Christianity and the attempt of Europeans to overcome it and return to their native roots, pagan in nature, naturally their downfall would ultimately be sealed by the very person who led to the first one, Martin Luther. For when the Borgias had overcome Christianity at its seat, Luther appeared. And it was him and the Protestant theologians following him who truly snuffed out the revolutionary spirit of the Renaissance by returning Christianity to its Middle Eastern and Jewish roots. Johannes Calvin, the true spiritual founding father of the USA, consequentially more so than others. If one will not be capable of dealing with Christianity, it will be the fault of the Germans, as Nietzsche had declared. Perhaps only the names of Bach, son Thomas Aquinas, Meister Eckhart, Mozart and Luther himself are indicators enough that Christianity fell on the most fertile ground among Germans, and often their anti-Semitism was indeed the final conclusion of Judeo-Christian morality, especially in the case of Luther. And if that is the case, and if that is our true guilt, then Germany had already defeated itself 400 years before National Socialism. Its downfall didn't bring the salvation of Ahasver by marking the end of Judeo-Christianity in Europe, but by the total eradication of the pagan spirit in Europe, including the last remnants of the Renaissance and the march to power of Zionism. Indeed, World War II was not a triumph of democracy, which is just a political formality and half of Europe fell to communism anyway, but of Judeo-Christianity, and by no coincidence, the Christian Democrats at the side of the Allies became the designers of the new West German Republic, where they still make up the firmly entrenched political establishment, giving birth to the archetype of ethno-suicide, the political priest and pastor fused with social democracy and socialism, while the communists became the rulers of East Germany. Angela Merkel is all of it combined. And if there's to be an answer to our crisis, it does not lie in Christian anti-Semitism, resenting Jewish ethnocentrism, obsessing over the Rothschilds, or, on the other hand, categorical hatred of Muslims. No people are a category. Even if some Jews have started viewing the white race as a category, defend yourself, but do not start to share their misguided prejudice, for all of these methods fall short. The answer lies in a new call to the re-evaluation of values and the birth of a ruling spirit that is truly European in nature. This is our agency. The nature of the majority of man is one of conformity, of belief, of obedience, and it does not change through time. Whether such nature lives under fascism, under National Socialism, under Maoist communism, under medieval kings and clergy, under a theocracy, in modern America, or in a European democracy, all of its conformity clouds itself as individualism. In totality, it cannot be enlightened or educated. It cannot be transformed through prayer or meditation or scientific inquiry. Human nature fundamentally remains the same, and it is the cult of the current generation to feel superior to the elders, most notably in democratic countries in relation to totalitarian regimes. But whenever you get a propaganda show rammed down your throat that has millions of views, how evil and humane it would have been if Hitler had won the war, and how we are living in the best of all possible worlds with the victory of democracy and human rights, never forget that it is this fundamental ignorance and the character of the ever-returning Untertan at work. Do not believe them, follow them, or obey them. Free thought and true freedom are not found among these masses, who are mere material for all power systems, whether they cloud themselves with the odors of freedom and liberty, or ordain themselves with the symbols of the divine, holy, and glorious. And that what is seen as evil today is merely the untimely interpretation of what once counted as good. Between the great storms of hatred which devastate our times and above the small political squalor stands firm and monolithic the unalienable right of a people to preserve itself if it so desires. A natural right that is as close to us as our own body and our right to life. Breaking this law is a crime against humanity itself, as every ethnic cleansing or genocide. I was a pan-European ethno-nationalist, and in so being, I could know myself united in the common struggle against the crimes against humanity, also imperialism and colonialism, with the great heroes of past and present, from Gandhi to the Dalai Lama. Because as the foundation of Gandhi's and Martin Luther King's struggle were born in the philosophy of Schopenhauer that made its way over Lev Tolstoy to Gandhi, so too was our realization born in pessimism and compassion and the determination to speak the uncomfortable truth to power that only the few steadfast were ready to hear. And it is in line with the eternal wisdom of humanity, as the German spirit is the world spirit, anima mundi. But now, isn't this Christian all too Christian? Should our own survival be dependent on a right and morality, all too confined to the Weltanschauung of the ruling world order, hoping for little scraps to us as slaves from the table of the masters? Please, dear Judeo-Christians, look into your hearts. Please, dear leftists, anti-white and Jews, let us live. There can be no honor gained from this path, and I share neither conscience nor spirit with them. They are not my humanity. And because we are still in the now millennia-long religious, spiritual, and philosophic crisis of Europe and the West, we have to answer this fundamental question. What gives us life? Yeah, that's about it.
There's a lot I wanted to say while you were talking. I really enjoyed listening to you, though. It was I like a lot of the analogies and metaphors you use too about the suffering of Christ being replaced by the Holocaust, because people will whine about the decline of Christianity and then think, well, the alternative is they went from that to atheism, but they didn't. They just replaced one authoritarian system with the new one. They went from Christianity to Holocaustianity. And that is the core mythos. And the devil was replaced by Hitler. If I were to walk outside with a sign that says, I love the devil or something like that, even if I wasn't in Japan, let's say I went to the United States and did this, I'd get some jeers and stuff. If I said, F the Jews, I'd go to prison, you know, or something.
Right. Right.
Not that I'd do either one, but you're seeing the epitome of evil, which used to be Satan, sinfulness, etc., has been replaced with Holocaustianity. And both are rooted in authoritarianism, where you just can't question, you literally can't question any aspect of it. You can get behind bars because of where you're located. So we won't talk about that. But just the fact that we're not allowed to talk about that should say something anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it really reminds me of the times when the Catholic Church has absolute authority. Yeah, it is a religion in a post-World War religion, and a true world order in a way, in a true Weltanschauung that has tried to frame it as this system of belief and obedience and values. It all kind of strive down from it.
Yeah, I think we talked before about how religions start as environmental explanations, and then as they get more complicated, it's whatever's useful for the state. But Christianity, which comes from Judaism, was invented by newly freed slaves, these Hebrews that were led out of exile by Cyrus the Great, not by God. But they're released, but all they know is slavery. So the religion becomes a slave-master relationship. God's the master, you're the slave. And it's super authoritarian. Well, it lingers around for a while, but the state realizes this is a great religion for us because it's totally authoritarian. We can say the king or the sultan or the emperor or whatever the leader's name is divinely chosen. And therefore you must obey us just like you obey your God. And so it's very useful for them. It also consolidates all the wealth under one roof. When you have polytheism, you have market competition. I know people don't think about it like this, but when you had all these Greek city-states, part of the money went to Athens or to Athena. Some went to another god, some went to another. When you have monotheism, it's all under one roof, which lets you have one large military, kill, convert, collect. Because every generation you brainwash into your cult, you get to tax. And when the Catholic Church had absolute power, they were tithing people. They were even selling get-out-of-jail cards.
Yeah.
which was the main reason why the Protestants broke away. It wasn't all just the theological and philosophical differences. It was the straw that broke the camel's back was selling cards to get out of hell, or that you could buy to get a loved one out of hell. Because the standards were such that everyone's going to hell. So you essentially had to buy one of these.
And yeah, but that was...
Go ahead.
Yeah, there was already a weakening of the Christian faith. I think it was turned into a business where the with the faith, actual religion and faith had already weakened, and especially with the Borgias, had led to a total decline of Christianity in Rome itself, and Luther wanted to reform that. And the one thing that was also the big difference was the idea that good deeds could not lead to salvation, as in Catholicism, but only the grace of God. Right?
Right.
And
belief instead of works.
Yeah. And Calvin added that it was predestined which soul would go to hell and which soul would go to heaven. And an indicator if your soul was chosen for heaven was material wealth, and thus Calvinism became the biggest motor for American capitalism and the industrial machine. I mean, as Weber wrote the work on Protestant worth ethics and the Industrial Revolution, right?
I would put it the other way around. I think profit is its own motive, and since they wanted to behave that way anyway, that attracted them to Calvinism.
Maybe, but Calvin invented the theory, the ideas.
Well, the capitalism still works even in non-Christian nations too. So I think the profit is already the motive. And this is just a more of a socially acceptable
rationalization.
Mass, yeah, to be a greedy son of a bitch.
I mean, it's interesting. The Calvinism did more to invert Christianity than all the social Darwinism in the world combined. Because in Christianity, actually, you reject the world, you reject wealth, you reject power, you reject all of this. But with Calvinism, it becomes acceptable.
Well, you do. The church doesn't. You're supposed to give. They're supposed to take.
Right. Well, yeah.
How convenient. That's why I like in Canterbury's Tales, and they're talking about the nun with her lipstick, but they get to the priest and he's preaching altruism and how not to be greedy, but all he's doing is passing around a collection plate.
Oh yeah, it's a long time since I read the Canterbury Tales. Yes, over 10 years, but I did read them, yeah.
I think good I story, read them in high school, but still I like that part. I was like, this is well done. They never finished them though.
Yeah?
Sadly. Yeah, they didn't go through all the characters. Yeah, but we have what we have. That's why I don't think people... I guess they do. Literature and, like I was saying before, even comic books are... The reason they resonate so much, and especially the hero motif, in my opinion, is because people are looking for a replacement for that spiritual myth. And the ones that are offered don't match their psychology. They weren't born as slaves. And this isn't appealing. It's very appealing if you're a peasant and resentful and you want to have a second life. And if you're fueled by jealousy and so on, then you're like, yeah, those nasty rich people are just going to burn and I'll be laughing. Like, there are people like that, you know. But, yeah, it's appealing to the weak and the meek and the obedient because you don't have to do anything. You have to just don't do things. And it's very easy to do that. And then even when you screw up, you can be forgiven no matter what it is. And so it's a really lowbrow system. And it just doesn't work. I don't think it ever worked. I wouldn't even say in the past it was good. It's just rotten from the start because it's centered on authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. And not only that, it's directly opposed to a lot of sources of human happiness. From pride to sexuality, like you name it, if it would make you smile, it's evil. And it should be the reverse. And that doesn't mean you go to the extremes and say you're brash and a whore and whatever, but the extreme is total renunciation and not even eating certain types of food. That's an extremity. That's not moderation. That's not the golden mean from Aristotle or Buddha. Mm. It's an extremity. If you don't fit that extremity, you're ridden with guilt. It's a double whammy.
Mm. Well, I can say that Catholicism did fuck up my sexuality pretty much, yeah. And it took me years and years and years to get past that, which isn't rare at all because there are millions of cases.
Recovering Catholic. Well, there's Catholic. A lot of you see what just happened. Where was it? In Brazil, I think. Another case where these bishops were fondling little kids. It just...
Mm.
And I don't think Catholicism causes that. I think it just attracts people who are already leaning that way. Because if you're any man, when they're saying they're renunciating women and only have sex under these really strict conditions, they're saying, church's not for me. I'm not doing that. But if you're homosexual, it's pretty easy to
to forget about women.
You're not interested.
And if repressed you're a pedophile, you know, I don't know, you might not even realize you are one until you're an adult. Who knows? Mm. They have so much guilt, though, for their natural thoughts that they shove them down until... The thing is, your sex drive is much stronger than your sex preference. That's why people in jail can just become gay who are not born that way. And I'm not saying homosexuality is psychological. I'm saying sometimes it is.
Find an outlet for the drive.
Just like if you lose your right arm, you can become left-handed. Like you can you can rewire your brain, so to speak. And I think a heavy amount of guilt and association to sin and evilness for even thinking unpure thoughts or whatever.
Burning in hell for eternity.
Yeah, it's scared the heck out of you.
If you really believe that stuff, you better believe that it's going to fuck you up, yes.
But it's the ultimate tyrant. I mean, that's child abuse to tell somebody a story like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if totalitarian regimes at least only want to kill you with these Abrahamic religions, you'll suffer for all eternity until the end of time and burn in the lake of fire and all of it. And that's, yeah. I mean, it's weird that it's still legal to do that. You go on and on about cults and Scientology
Chop off a piece of a boy's dick. I mean, that's that's genital mutilation.
Yeah,
and it doesn't prevent, it's not for health reasons, right? Like,
no.
I live in a country that doesn't do it, and they're not all suffering from urinary tract infections or something.
Same in all of Europe.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I wonder if that act of violence doesn't possibly wire the brain a little bit from youth to be a bit screwed up and violent.
It does. It does, absolutely, in Islam too, I think. It also, because it also happens late in Islam, I think you get circumcised as an adolescent, not just as a child. But I think both is equally traumatizing.
I've seen it done to some babies, and I just can't imagine why any parent would do that.
Well, because they were sold the lie that it was necessary for their health, and if they wouldn't do it, all terrible things would happen. And then the baby foreskin...
No, the lie is religion, and they don't have the ability to argue their religion, so they just say health. And I don't really believe that either.
Yeah, but the Christians in America who do that aren't obliged to do it by their religion. It is exclusively Judaism that has that.
No, it's like I said before, religion is as religion does. So it's kind of like it already happened to the father, so it's going to happen to the son. It's like that. It's more of a customary thing, but it all got started from religion. Like, it takes religion to think of something that creative and brutal. Like, I know, once the baby's fresh out, let's cut off a piece of its dick. I mean, why?
Yeah.
It was to mark slaves, so even if they ran away, you could pull down the doors and know they're supposed to be a slave, whatever. But why do it now? That's why.
There's this bitter irony that Judaism would do this to Americans, you know, I mean, to mark the slaves.
They are. They're marking the slaves. Americans do it to each other. And don't even really know why.
Well, because they're bowing down to the god of the Jews.
There's feminists, too, that just like the aesthetics of it or whatever. And you think about that and go, wow. So you can carve off a man's penis when he's a baby and has no choice or say in it because you think it looks good.
Yeah, nice.
Amazing. So he has no rights.
Yeah, I'm also not a big fan of abortion, to be honest. I mean, to end a human life in the process of becoming, that's also, I think, not really okay.
I'm torn on that because the majority of abortions are done by leftists. And so I'm thinking, in the long run, are we not preventing, are we preventing more death?
Yeah. Eugenics, so to speak. Voluntary eugenics.
I think it's ending the potential life, and I really honestly think if you have an abortion before 10 weeks, that is not the same as killing a fetus or something. And I think if you do it after that, it's pretty much a baby. It's just a really, really tiny one, I don't buy into this can it live outside of the mother or not. My life for me starts with, is it conscious? If it has a brain and it's got the consciousness of even a worm, then they're alive. But prior to having a brain or bones or anything, when you're an embryo, I'm like, I can't really honestly get myself to think that's a baby. I think it's going to be one, but it isn't one yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it will be one, and it's growing inside of you, and it definitely will be.
It will be.
And that's the thing. Yeah.
You know, I think if you get it before that happens, you can have another one later.
It depends if it endangers the health of the mother seriously, or if it's a rape or incest case, then
it doesn't matter. I mean, if it passes 10 weeks, it's alive, and you should have done that beforehand. If you get it before 10 weeks, then it's not a person yet. It's all the what if. I mean, a lot of people have miscarriages. That's why they don't give the baby a name after first month or whatever, because so many naturally don't make it anyway. But I draw the line at consciousness. Once it's conscious, you have to have that and give it up for adoption or something, or raise it. You can't kill it for any reason, or it's murder. If it's before 10 weeks, I'm fine with any reason, as long as you pay for it yourself.
I don't know, I think I still wouldn't have the feeling that it would be all right, just because it's a potential life, you know, and it's growing inside of you. Maybe scientifically, okay, maybe not.
Yeah, I probably couldn't do it, but I admit I'm just being emotional, and I would never do it, but I would let other people do it, because I can't, from a totally logical perspective, I'm like, well, it doesn't have a brain, so,
But I
wouldn't do it.
In a few weeks, it will have.
Mm-hmm.
It will have a brain.
In a few weeks, you can't do it. I mean, that's that. How far back can you go? Like a sperm, if it happens to be an egg, every time you jerk off is a holocaust.
Well, but it on itself, it won't be a potential life. Just
like in my case, it was a potential two lives, because I ended up cloning myself and have a twin.
So, true.
But that didn't happen until after 10 weeks, you know. So you never know how many lives you're taking out. It's a you know, not an easy question. That's why it's such a wedge issue. But
yeah, but I think it's genetic engineering or something is a much smaller issue, actually, because it's a free decision of a human being to just alter his condition while he is alive. The other one is taking a life. And I don't see.
Yeah, genetic engineering, if it's the parent deciding that, not state. My question, my fear is it won't be the parent deciding that, it'll be the state. And yeah, not into that. I'm not into the state doing much anything.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
We already alter ourselves with as simple as wearing glasses or getting braces to fix crooked teeth or whatever. Hell, wearing shoes, like. Whatever, you know. I had a bunch of eye surgeries after my accident with lasers and the rest of it. Like, why shouldn't I fix it?
There's another thing we have in common, because I had a serious eye injury as well, not too long ago. And I had three eye operations with lasers, and it was pretty painful for many weeks, and I stayed in the hospital, and I was almost blind, and constant pain for days lasting.
It sucks, and your depth perception gets all screwed up, which gives you headaches. Then when you get your eye back, it's still screwed up because you've gotten used to the other one. You got to go through it all over again.
It made me realize how dependent I am on modern technology and civilization, because without it, I would be blind today and in constant pain.
Yeah.
And so,
or never even made it to that point.
Yeah, I might have killed myself because of the constant pain that caused this.
I was saying about entropy and how we always have more dumb than smart, whatever. We're also all going to only know a portion of stuff. I was going on an elevator today, and prior to going on the elevator, I was just messing around on my phone, and I watched this thing. It was like Survivor or something, women on an island, men on an island. And of course, the women, like, everything they built fell apart. They couldn't find food. It was raining. They just suffered. But I was thinking, the guys did all right. They found some crabs. They built a hut. They had fire. They were flying. They won every single challenge. Even the ones that were designed for the girls about balance and stuff, the guys just dogged them because the girls had no unity. They were dogging each other and didn't work together. And because these are modern women from Britain, so could be different with different. Well, anyway, I was watching this island thing, and I was thinking, you know, if I'm from an island, but I'm thinking, how much could, if I'm in that situation, could I do? And all the stuff they were doing, I knew how to do. But I was on this elevator. I'm like, do I know how to build an elevator that opens automatically? I don't. I mean, I know how to make a pulley and stuff, but like a real elevator, I don't have a fucking clue how to do that. I could go look it up and probably learn in a couple of hours, but right now, I don't know. And there's all kinds of stuff I use every day that I have no idea how to make, or, you know, someone else does it. But that allows me to know a lot about something else, because we can all rely on each other and specialize, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that empathy thing is still true, because I know a lot about a few things, and all this other stuff that I know of, I don't know. I don't know how this microphone works even that I'm talking in, or to kind of know, but not really, you know, and I never will. I'm never going to learn all the stuff I use. And so that entropy thing about intelligence, rather than just pure physics of just states of matter, I think holds true also. It's impossible to, there's always so much more you can't know than what you can. Now, it's different to say how much we know. Like, collectively, all these people know all these different things. We know all the stuff we've ever done, actually. But as what you say, I know, then you're definitely in the dark.
Yeah, we're always in the bubble of ignorance. And the only these small flickers of light that we truly know. And even then, the deeper you get into a subject, the more you know, how much more there is to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's Socrates, you know, being aware of your own ignorance is a sign of intelligence. Mm-hmm. In that paper you wrote, you had a quote from Einstein saying that he didn't see anything special about his people other than their lack of power is, you know, made them
absent from the worst abuses of it.
They're definitely doing it now, shooting 62 people in the faces.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen or read his letter to the New York Times right after 1940. It was like December of 1948. He and a bunch of other prominent intellectual anti-Zionist Jews wrote this letter to the New York Times. Have you seen that?
No, I don't think so, no.
It's in one of my films, but essentially he's just dogging Menachem Begin, and he calls them terrorists, and he gives the example of the attack on Deir Yassin where 240 people were murdered by Zionists, and they chopped off their heads and they piled their bodies up, and it looked like Buchenwald or something, you know. It looked like a concentration camp, but this was just a village that didn't even participate in the war. Just the Stern Gang and these groups went there and murdered and then left a few alive, which they caged up and paraded around Jerusalem like trophies, and it was really disgusting. And Einstein's writing about this, and he said, they call it the Freedom Party, which we call Likud today. That's Netanyahu's party.
Netanyahu's party, yes.
He said, among the most disturbing political phenomena of our times is the emergence in the newly created state of Israel of the Freedom Party, a political party closely akin in its organization's method, political philosophy, and social appeal to Nazi and fascist parties. And then he goes, it was formed out of membership following former Irgun terrorist, a right-wing chauvinist organization in Palestine, da-da-da-da. This is Albert Einstein. How many people who study Albert Einstein from science? I mean, he's one of the most famous figures in history, right? Like, globally.
Right.
Not just in America. Like, everybody knows Einstein. Whether he stole ideas in his patent office, whatever. How many people know that he spoke out against the formation of the State of Israel and he said it was formulated by terrorists. And he called Menachem Begin a terrorist, who becomes prime minister, by the way.
Yeah.
How many people know that? They offered him the first presidency, and he rejected it. He said a Jewish state's as silly as having a Jewish bus or a Jewish chair, and he wanted none of it.
I think I remember that, yes. I was looking into it a bit, but I had remained of the conviction that he had remained a Zionist throughout his life, and I didn't know about that.
Well, he did, because Zionist, when he was younger, didn't mean racial supremacy. Zionism, early Zionism was supposed to be during a crisis when Jews are being, you know, thrown into camps and things, was to create a Jewish homeland to preserve the culture and physical race or ethnic group, where, and it could have been in Mauritia, it could have been in Madagascar, there were all these ideas, but it was to be a homeland and a safe haven, because they didn't know they were going to win the war or not, you know, and so that was the Zionism that he followed. What became was Menachem Begin and, you know, all six of the first six Israeli prime ministers were all in terrorist groups. And the Jewish agency that controlled Haganah and the Palmach, and which are the, they're terrorist organizations that had a naval and land wing, right? These groups with Stern were all under the umbrella of the Jewish agency. And the Jewish agency becomes the first government of Israel. And then captains and stuff of the Haganah and Palmach and Palimach were people like Menachem Begin, people like Ben-Gurion. They were there as people blowing up hotels and boats and chopping off people's heads. And just like ISIS today, that's what they did, the same kind of behavior. Even attacking other Jews, which Einstein pointed out too, is the anti-British terrorism and Arab and Jewish, because they were killing Jews who were leaving Palestine to force them to stay.
Right, I remember that. Is that in the Empire Unmasked, this letter? I think
It's all in his letter. Well, he doesn't talk about the boat bombing specifically. He just says, you know, he talks about the attack on the Arab village and acts of terrorism and fascism. And he does talk about also how they went around beating up teachers, shooting people who wouldn't let their children join them, breaking windows, gangster tactics, he called it, which is very 1940s language, you know. And then, yeah. So, yeah, it was December 4th, 1948, Einstein's letter to the New York Times, and it was signed by a lot of other prominent intellectuals, like Sidney Hook is in there, and a few rabbis and so on.
Oh,
and I don't think a lot of, I don't think that's very well known. That's why I put it in one of my films. I have a film called The Jewish State, in scare quotes, How Terrorists Formed a Nation. Because that history is lost. And yet the mythical history of King David and all, every kid knows that. The actual history of how Israel was formed, no one knows that. I'm trying to change that.
I think you do.
Slowly, it's happening. They're going to be, 110's going to be up on the board soon. I say they've been kicked out of 109 countries or places. They're going to get kicked out of the Golan Heights. And I'm 100% certain of this. This isn't, I'm not an optimist. But I have been correct on Syria the whole time.
Yeah.
And when Syria goes in to Daraa, which is going to be soon, could be tonight even, who knows. It's going to be soon. They have to go into the Golan Heights to kick out Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Do you think then they're going to just leave and let the Israelis return? No, not a chance.
Well, it depends on what the USA will do.
Well, all we really can stomach, because the public doesn't... Like, if the US wanted to kick them out, they could, if they want to lose like 10,000 people, but they don't. So, cruise missiles can be blocked. Syria can lose 500 men or something if they have to. And the Golan is going to be Syrian. That's happening. And Trump right now, his base is kind of revolting on him because he's cucked for Israel so hard.
Yeah.
And all these people want is a damn wall.
Right.
They don't care about this stuff. They liked vintage Trump. It's like, get out of there. They're like, yeah, get out of there. Build a wall. That's their thing.
Yeah, he did say a lot of things in the 2013 and 2014 that essentially were alt-right, or the things you were saying or I was saying did change a lot. And I think what's so significant about these airstrikes on Syria is not that he bombed the airfield or killed these people. I think what's significant is that the Jewish neocon establishment could make him tell or even believe a lie and tell it to the entire world.
Oh, and about the gas attacks, that was so see-through.
Yeah.
And then you see this alliance between all these leftists and these neoconservatives suddenly gave him all this praise. Oh, he's so presidential now.
Yeah. I mean, David Cole wrote an article about Trump as the Jewish president, inspired by Ann Coulter, I think, and it was Tacky Mac. And he said the same happened essentially with Arnold Schwarzenegger in...
Hey, I assume you were enjoying that since you reached this far into it. The entire talk is more than 2 hours long, and it delves back into the philosophy of science, which I found interesting. You can get all the podcasts on psych, philosophy, politics, economics, current events on Patreon. Follow the link. I appreciate your support, and thanks for listening.